Here's to you, dear listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Metal Gear Monday's Revengeance, where you'll find some of your favorite conversations around Metal Gear and Kojima-related content delivered to you through Tactical Podcast Action. So today's a special episode. We have done some interviews, and when I say we, I just want to bring up a few people with me. So one of those people are Alessio Summerfield. What's up, man?
Hey.
And the other for today's interview, Mr. Chris Hampton. How we doing?
Yo, 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 yo.
Full What's of up? Energy today. So today's interview is with the, I guess we could call, you know, the musician, the composer, Fingers, who is sort of known in the Metal Gear verse with his remixes and some of his other stuff, which he gladly goes into sort of his history. Did you guys have fun with this conversation?
Oh, noted wordsmith and very, very fun man to talk to. Fingers was a real treat. Yes, I'm trying to think of a joke, something to say about Fingers and strumming my pain, my pain with his fingers. he killed me softly with this podcast.
Oh, my God. I know, love the journey we just went on with you there, Alessio. Thank you.
He's quite a prodigious person.
Okay. Hey.
All right. Wow, I was feeling real good about this, guys. I'm going to be honest.
And I just killed that for you, didn't I?
I love it. Nah, it's great. But yeah, so please feel free to listen through. Fingers is an awesome guy. We make sure he sort of has, you know, his Twitch, his YouTube, his music. Follow him on Facebook. He makes sure to, you know, we give him all the time in the world to plug because he's a pretty rad dude. For us... you can find this at MetalGearMondays.com. You can find us on any of the audio platforms. It will be dropped on YouTube as well, if that's where you're hearing it. Hi, YouTube. Otherwise, Alessio, where can they find you?
I also just want to say, hey, YouTube, how's the weather? you can find me at AC Summerfield, Chris? Pretty much everywhere, or AlessioSummerfield.com for everything. Very easily found in one place as opposed to across many. And yeah, no, Fingers is dope. I've been following him on Bandcamp for a long time. So you can go to fingersmusic.bandcamp.com. I believe that's correct. He says it as well. But
yes.
It's F1NG3RS music at most places. But yes.
Where can they find you on the internet, my man?
Oh, you can't find me on the internet. You can find me on the Discord. You can find me on Metal Gear Mondays. .com in the bio section. You can find me on this podcast.
Chris's hesitance was Chris literally hiding the last vestige of his identity from the internet during that question.
Literally sweeping question. It under the rug.
Yeah, I just deleted my Facebook right now. So
yeah, his finger was hovering over the enter key as he was paying off somebody to wipe him from the internet.
I delivered my own nuclear payload into
Ooh.
My online identity.
Super quick aside, I just need you guys to know, I Googled myself trying to find my own address on the internet and found it on the third page of Google and scared the shit out of myself earlier today. So Whoa. That's a thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess it's hard. Once you own land or something yeah. along those lines, it's tough to sort of keep that. At bay.
Yeah. As soon as the credit scores start floating.
Yep.
I want you guys to go to chrishampton.com.
Right now?
Yeah. That's where you can find me on the internet. Chrishampton.com.
100%. This is the greatest website I've ever been to.
And I'm assuming you have nothing to do with this, Chris? Is
oh, just, I have, you paid I have someone nothing. To take care of this? I have nothing. I did not. This so is breath. Not me.
Chris is going to be replaced on most appearances across the internet with just with the contents of this website moving forward. Oh,
beautiful. I'm so proud of you, Chris. I yeah. really am.
Cherish the sound of his voice because it's literally just a JPEG on a website.
It's amazing. So, it does make sure you know he's in Georgia, though. So we got that going for us.
Yeah, Chris, this could be you in like an alternate future, I think.
It could be, yeah. Got the Casablanca poster.
100%. That's my favorite.
Stratocaster.
That and the fucking what is it called? The that game. He's got a game board in the background. What is that thing where you sweep the pucks across the sandy little shuffleboard thing at the bar?
The shuffleboard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There we go.
Love
He's playing at a bar, clearly.
We can, we'll send this to noted mod and good friend Chad, who runs the Discord. We'll send this to him, and I guarantee you he can tell you exactly where this photo was taken in like an hour and a half.
He has so many like means of cross-referencing and data gathering.
So spooky.
Well, you can find me on the internet, Warren Minix. I don't really have any shame as far as if you guys want to find me. I really suck with social media. However, if you're into gamer tags, I'm Untaggable Gamer. You can get us at Patreon, Metal Gear Mondays, and you can go to MetalGearMondays.com. And I believe we have some sweet merch you can grab from that website as well as some other stuff there. So thank you guys again. And without further ado, an interview with Fingers.
All right.
Well, thanks for joining us, Fingers. How's everything going this evening?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Feeling pretty good. Just got a new track out today. It's one of those like hectic promo days. You know how it goes.
I like it. I like it. Before we dive in proper, was the description, the style, and the title, are these all references to the jankiness of Cyberpunk 2077 right now?
They weren't actually, but it's kind of funny how it like all kind of just like came together with that. Like we were talking about like themes and everything. I was like, yeah, like if you look up the definition, it's like jank is like, you know, like bad quality, and then like junk can be like anything. Like it can be used for narcotics or just like a substitute word, like, hey man, hand me that junk. And it's just like, okay, cool. So with jank junk, it was kind of like this word that didn't mean anything, but it was like bad quality anything, you know. So it's a nonsense word pretty much. It didn't really have anything to do with Cyberpunk, but the fact that Cyberpunk did come out in such a janky state, you know, I might pair it up with Cyberpunk, you know, just for some visuals later down the road.
Oh man.
Nice.
Cyberpunk. Poor Cyberpunk, man. I was looking forward to that, but I can't say I'm super happy with it, but I can't say that it's like unplayable. You know, I'm like, I mean, if we would have given it more time, we probably would have had a better game, but we had to rush it out and send death threats, you dumbasses.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Thanks for Christmas sales, CDPR higher ups.
I bought a new Xbox for this game.
Yeah.
And it looks better, but there's just like some stuff you can't even finish. You know?
Yeah, I mean, PC is the way to go, apparently, but it's like, and I'm playing it on a base PS4. I rented it from Gamefly, so I'm kind of like, okay. Ooh. And like, I see the problems, but it's still not as bad as the online community is saying it. And that's a big problem, I think, with the Metal Gear community, too. They like to like blow stuff way out of proportion. Mm-hmm. And then when people hear the news about it, they're like, oh, I'm not going to touch that game because XYZ. And it's like, yeah, but it's really PDQ. You know, it's like, it's not really those things. Yeah. It's really just this kind of thing.
And, yeah, I feel like I'm in a weird place because I literally got done logging my 64th hour in Cyberpunk before we jumped on this podcast. But I am playing on PC, so fair enough.
Yeah, there's a good game underneath all that stuff. Like, I can tell there's I like the quest lines. Some of the characters are pretty cool. Like, the gunplay and the customizability is all there. But it's like, they just had to rush it, and here we are.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It's a pretty good Deus Ex game, I will say that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like System Shock, something like that. It's a beautiful game, and I'm having a blast with it. I've hit points in the game on the console where I can't finish certain quests because they bug out. So yeah. I'm just going to peace out, I think, from it for like a month or so.
Just give it some time. Later. Exactly.
Yeah. It's just some jank junk.
I'll play some Forza. It's fine.
Yeah, man. I took the high road. We talk about it in our Discord and all that, but I was like, guys, I think I'm going to take the couple month hiatus. I'm going to play some other games.
Yeah, man, there's this weird like societal thing right now where it's like games are hot for like a couple weeks, a month maximum, and then it's like you're still playing that, and it's like, man, what happened to games with like longevity and like staying power? You really don't have that unless it's a games as a service type game. And it's really weird how that time area has just gotten like much, much shorter. It's like people's attention spans are like, all right, what's next? Like, we beat that last week. What are you talking about?
Yeah, in a weird way, and I think I've talked about this a few times in our Discord, but like in a weird way, I feel like
it has been way easier to pay complete and total attention to like VR games than it has normal games, because you literally can't not look at the thing. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. Yeah. I don't know how many like cutscenes. I'm like, all right, cool, cutscene, time to look at Twitter. And it's like, oh, yep. I missed the story.
Yep. So it's been like a weird, I don't know. In general, it's been bizarre. And I think, I don't know, man. It feels like the past 11 months, it's been like a new console, a new game, a new thing. And like, and then there's this, and then there's this. And I was looking at my backlog and I'm like, dude, I haven't even touched like 30 games from 2019.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what am I doing right now?
Buying all the new stuff as it comes out on day one.
Yeah, 100%. So getting into today's episode proper, I wanted to ask, so I mean, all of us know you from your presence on Twitter, your Bandcamp. You've been pretty much, as far as I'm concerned, I feel like you might be like the Metal Gear Solid community, like fan community, like musician guy that like I've just always known exists on the internet. But how do you introduce yourself to somebody like your mother's friend? How do you intro what you do?
Well, I normally don't bring up the Metal Gear stuff first and foremost. I am an electronic musician. I make music that's original. I make music that's covers of video games. I do remixes, and I do also DJ my sets and my music when I'm out, but I don't necessarily call myself a DJ. I'm a person that DJs. So yeah, it's mainly like an electronic music producer is like my title, I guess you would say. And then the whole Metal Gear side of it, like I think it was 7 years ago, I started being admin on this page called Solid Snake. And that was on Facebook, and that's / Solid Snake Lulz, LULZ. And back then it was kind of just like a one of those like mixed meme pages where it was like there was hundreds of them on Facebook back in the day. It was just like post whatever, people like it and they share it, whatever. But yeah, it was named Solid Snake, and like they were posting a lot of good Metal Gear content, but also all this other stuff. And I was like, man. And I got kind of cool with the admins and stuff. And basically I got to become one of the admins after a while. And I was like, hey, what if we shifted this to like just Metal Gear? We cut out all the random memes that aren't related and we switch it over to that. And they were like, actually, yeah, that's a great idea. Like if we stick to just that, it'll be our core audience. And that was back when it was like, it had like 15,000 likes on it at that point. And so like over the course of like 2 or 3 years, we got it up to over 100,000 people on there. And it just got to be this huge meme community where it was just like, That was what we were, you know. I guess we were like we're the biggest unofficial Metal Gear page on Facebook besides like Metal Gear Solid, like by Konami and stuff. So
that's crazy. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks, congrats, man. Yeah. And so like as an admin there, you're constantly posting artwork. You're constantly posting, you know, people's videos that were out. And for me, I was like, all right, I can make memes. I know how to Photoshop, but I also can make remixes. So I would take a lot of the Metal Gear songs, and what most people know me as is the guy that made the damn fiddle remix. It's like, yeah, I made they played us like a damn fiddle remix. And that's like my most popular thing. That's my Harlem Shake, the thing that I'm not super proud of, but follows me everywhere. but yeah, so that's kind of like my name got out there is from people looking at that remix and going, oh, fingers, it's spelt with a 1 and a 3. Okay. And that just kind of stuck in their brains. So whenever they see me in the Metal Gear community outside of that, they go, oh, you're the fiddle guy. And I'm like, yep, that's me, the fiddle guy. And so like I get comments every day that are, you know, and that comment or sorry, the remix is of, you know, Kaz, of course, when he says they played us like a damn fiddle, but it has samples in there when he says, you spying bitch. And so I took that one little bitch, and like that's like the chant in the song is he's just going bitch, bitch. And then I also sampled it when Ocelot said it in MGS3. I did take that one too and threw it in there, so there would be like alternating ones. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'll get like comments all the time where it's just like bitch, and I'm like, hey, oh, okay, it's about that.
So it's like Dave Chappelle at Walt Disney World.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm Rick James, bitch.
Yeah, so you're just hearing that being shouted at you or in your comments, and it's like, okay, it's these people, cool.
Metal Gear, I love it,
it's the fam.
What's the worst thing that you've ever had to, this might be a little loaded. What's the worst thing that you've ever had to moderate or admin away from existence on that Facebook page?
Oh man.
If you can talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, people get real nasty in comments, man. And it's like, as soon as they start going, like, it's like, you can kind of like insult each other. Like, I'll let that happen. You know, they're like, oh, shut up, dumbass. And it's like, all right, cool. But it's like, anytime they get racist, I'm like, you're out of here. Anytime they're like homophobic, really, I'm like, you're out of here. It's like, I'm just not going to like tolerate that, really. You know, I'm not about that.
For sure.
I live in Virginia, and it's kind of like that state when it comes to like Confederacy and all this, like the real racism stuff. So like anytime I see people like really just like even like playing at it, I'm like, nah, man, you can't be doing that here. You know, that's not what we're about here. So that's the kind of stuff that I really try to just knock out as soon as I see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than Warren's Yankee ass, I think me and Chris have spent a long time living down south. So
trying not to amplify that type of stuff. Really. Yeah, it's just, there's plenty of it out there.
The worst I get is John. When I call things John.
Mm-hmm. That and pop.
Yeah, then you'll get like people like kind of like obsessed on something. They'll start like looking you up and looking up details and stuff. And it's like, man, why are you doing all this? And that those people can get kind of scary, and you just got to like block them, and they make another account. And it's like, okay, here, I can do this all day, man. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. So that, I mean, all started, sounds like 7-ish years ago. When would you say that you were like bitten by the Metal Gear bug? I mean, was it with the PS1 game like most people, or was it earlier?
Yeah, it was
than that?
Definitely earlier than that, but like it wasn't a hard bite at first. It was kind of like a nibble at first. It was I played the NES game when I was a kid. I had older brothers that were like 6 and 7 years older than me, and they had all the games that, you know, were coming out. And I remember playing Metal Gear as a kid and going, oh my God, this is hard as shit. How do I get past this first little section? And never really went back to it. But then my cousin came to me later, and was it 1998? Yeah. And said, hey man, remember that game Metal Gear? They're making a new one called Metal Gear Solid. And I was like, well, that sounds dumb. But just based off the title, like I was like, cool, great naming convention. But then I later played it on the demo disc. And that first time where the guards saw the footsteps and started looking after me, I was like, oh, this is some new shit. Like this is next level. And I think that is the moment where I was like, yo, okay, this like really got me into it. And anybody that pretends like they knew about the MSX versions before the HD collection or the internet, shut up. It's like, we grew up on Metal Gear and Snake's Revenge, and then we had the PlayStation, and then we learned about the MSX stuff like way later down the road, you know.
Right.
And then we all pretended like we knew about it.
I'll still cling to my hipster subsistence disc because that had those on there.
Exactly. But yeah. I feel you. It was like once they started re-releasing them over here, it's like, okay, now we can talk about it, pretend like we knew about it. But like no one really knew about the Japanese versions in my immediate circle at all. So it was
for
like,
sure.
That was definitely like when he was referencing Zanzibar Land, you're like reading through the book, like, when did this shit happen? Like, this is. So I think that curiosity of like trying to complete that, like kind of got me thinking about it a lot more. And then when MGS2 came out, I was like, here we go. And that we got that immediately. And me and a buddy played that like the first night it came out and just sat up all night and just got through it. Yeah, but it really bit us hard, and we thought we were kind of like tripping out at the end, you know, because it was like 4 a.m. and like Colonel's freaking out doing his AI stuff, and we're like, are we supposed to turn the console? No, keep it on. Why would you turn it off?
That's amazing.
Yeah, it definitely bit hard around that. Like, and I was in high school around that time in MGS2, so I was like 8th or 9th grade. Yeah, when that came out. So
nice. Yeah, I 100%. I think we're in the same exact age pocket because it was the exact same year for me.
I was born in 87, so that's 11 years old when Metal Gear Solid came out. So that's quite the impressionable age of like, wow, this is gonna really change my life and worldview on things.
Yeah, this is super sick. Yeah, and I often think because of that Zanzibar Land stuff early on and the Frank Yeager Gray Fox, where you're like, who the fuck are these people? Yeah. Or even Big Boss, like hearing Big Boss and seeing Big Boss in the instruction manual, but never actually seeing him in the game. It's like I feel like those things made it better, and I do wonder if there's like a diminishing returns with the series as it tried to make that stuff materialize more and more. But anyway, before I fall into a hole, I wanted to ask, I mean, so how do you go from Solid Snake lols on Facebook to the Kojima Productions Network with Ryan and Chelsea and everybody? So like, could you kind of bridge the gap into like modern day fingers?
I guess, I mean, it's funny, Ryan, AKA Nitroid, he basically was like a fan of the Solid Snake page and was just like a person that would comment on there. Little did I know, he used to run Metal Gear Solid, the unofficial site, and was an admin. Mm-hmm. Like, so he was like in the old school crew of like the people that I used to go on his website and look around. And so it was this full circle thing of like, oh yeah, we've been in the community for a while and we got along like perfectly. We were like, oh, okay, cool. And as far as Days goes, I met her through Tumblr, and that was actually through the Fiddle Remix. She had reblogged that. And I was like promoting a concert that I was playing that night. I was like, hey, I'm DJing tonight at this club. And she's like, oh, you live in the same state I do. Word. And I was like, yeah, you should come out. And she came out and we met, and,
oh wow,
you know, it was just, you know, cool, friendly meetup. And then like over the past couple of years, I've been, you know, with all the podcasting boom, I was like, man, I'd love to do a Metal Gear podcast, because this is something I can talk about all day, every week. Doesn't matter. You know, it's just something that I have that much information on that I can talk about it enough. And I think like podcasting is like, it's like Breaking Bad, you know, it's all about chemistry. And like, I was looking for people to do it with, and we tried out a bunch of different people, and I was like, I don't know about these. They're out of, that didn't work out that great. But when we first got the group together, it was four of us, and we had like Ninja Turtles level chemistry. It was like we like, yeah, it was perfect. Like Nitroid was Leo, I was like the goofy Mikey, Days was like the analytical Donatello, and then we had Vector, who was just like this angry guy that would like contradict whatever we would say. We'd be like, we're excited. He'd be like, fuck your excitement. But here's a cool reason why. And that's, he wasn't just like, you know, that's not to talk any kind of shit towards right. Vector. He's not just like a blind hater that's like, this sucks. He's got very good taste and very good like expectations for stuff. And he'll tell you why something should have gone one way, or the writing error. You know, like when you have somebody that's into movies and film on that level, it can get, you know, your expectations get a little higher. And then for me, I'm just kind of like carefree, like whatever. I enjoyed Survive, you know, so I have fun with whatever. It's all good. So, you know,
you breezed right through that. I appreciate the confidence in which you delivered that line.
Yeah. So, you know, it's basically just like we had a good chemistry, and, you know, I think that finally hit, that was at the beginning of this year. And we started kind of doing some test recordings and trying to figure out the format and stuff in like early January of this year. And I told him, I was like, let's record a few episodes and keep them in the bank. And then that way, when we start rolling them out, we've got kind of like a backlog. And if we can't record that week, we've got like this little bank here. And so we started like releasing them in like June of this year, you know, and that's, we've just been slowly cranking them out. We're on episode 25 right now on the Kojima Frequency, and we got a nice little holiday break situated right now. So we're taking like 2 weeks off, and then we're going to be hitting it back again in 2021. So
nice. And thus began the great podcast Cold War. No. So the real question is, which one of us is Zero and which one of us is Big Boss? But
I don't know. I think you guys came first, so I think you get the Zero title on that.
Oh, no. Yes. That means Nitroid's going to cut our oxygen tanks off in our wheelchair?
Pretty much.
God damn it.
Oh, no. Then I have to fight Nitroid. Shit.
So Fingers, you had brought up... so again, the bug sort of bit you like that early on, Metal Gear Solid in a word. Were you like the only person, or like you maybe had like a couple of friends like growing up with Metal Gear? Were you like the person that sort of like made Metal Gear like niche in a sense? And did like the music tie to that at all? Or was it just more like this game's dope?
I think like when it first came out, it was, I played through with it with my brother and my cousin. And so it was kind of just like, there wasn't too many friends that had it. I think there was maybe three people in middle school that had it. One guy wrote his sixth grade report on it. I remember that. He was like, my favorite yes. gift that I ever got was Metal Gear Solid. And I was like, all right, cool. But then like after that, there really wasn't that many people that were into it in my like immediate circle. And then I had another friend when I like moved and changed schools, and then we played through that was the same, you know, guy that I played MGS2 together with, and he's been a guy that I've talked Metal Gear with. But like, I'm like, hey man, yeah, did you play Snake Eater? And it's like, oh no, I missed that one. I'm like, oh, you play 4? No, I didn't have PS3. And it's like, I can't talk to you about Metal Gear, man. Like, that's, it's like, so it's like I would have people that would be like, yeah, I played Metal Gear Solid 2, that was fun, didn't play anything else though. And I'm like, you don't get it then. Like, that's, I mean, you're getting a small piece of it, but that's not the level on that I'm at on this at all. So yeah. And then as far as like the music tying into it, I think being inspired by the music that's in Metal Gear Solid is definitely something that happened. The mix that they like, the mix of genres that Metal Gear brings to the table, like really just shows off Kojima's like diversity. And like when it comes to applying music to situations, I think he's really good at that. You know, he's got like good music selection. It can go from tense, moody, like background music that's not doing too much, or like really melodic. You know, if you look at the older, the retro MSX2 games, like I love the soundtrack to Metal Gear 2 Solid Snake. Some of the, like, those are just tunes. Yeah. Like, classic, the textures, the chips that they were using back then to make them. I've done a few covers and remixes, but I you know, there's something about that era, that sound, you know, that was coming out of those chips that are just like, chef's kiss. So a lot of people have told me my music will remind them of certain type things. Like, oh yeah, I feel like I'm infiltrating a thing, or like I'm sneaking around. I get more like Hotline Miami comparisons and like that kind of like genre where it's that like gnarly kind of electronic. But I've done songs definitely that are similar to Metal Gear in nature. And like I've had albums and song titles that are references. I think like my song Corridors, that was like a direct imagery of Gray Fox, kind of like when you're walking down that corridor, you know, the bloody hallway. And it's like, that's kind of what I had in my mind when I did that. I have a song on my second album called Retaliation. I had just finished watching the MGSV trailer when Venom Snake's just walking down the hall and he slowly turns more and more bloody. And, you know, that was the Retaliation Breeds Retaliation trailer. And so that, like, that quick little theme, like, got me in a mind state where I was like, let's write some music that's, you know, it's about retaliation and like that feel and that mood. So I would say Metal Gear has definitely lended itself to my creation a lot, but it may not be directly inspired, like the music itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, were you a band kid in high school when you were playing these games, or did you get like into music like later in life?
I started music just as like, I was like 6 years old. I had a little Casio keyboard and I would just play by ear.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it had a little sampler on it too, where you could like talk into it and record your voice. Ooh, and then you could like play it up style. And down, and like, yeah, it was great. But then around middle school, band came around as the elective, and I was like, let me try saxophone. I like how that Saturday Night Live sound, you know, how that blaring saxophone sound. I like Kenny G. I want to learn how to do that. And then I didn't like the way that the reeds smelt, and I didn't like the taste of wood, and I switched to drums. Yeah. So I went over to percussion at that point in seventh grade. And then that's why I was like, oh, drums are my thing. Like, I got this. And that turned into like mallet percussion, where I wasn't just playing the drums. I was playing the xylophone, the bells, all the like noted instruments, because I knew how to play piano. And all these dumb, not to be shitty, all these dumb drummers didn't know how to read music. But really, drummers know how to read rhythm. But like when it comes to notation, it's a whole different thing that they aren't required to learn necessarily. So it's like they know the rhythm of the notes. But anyway, I was the only guy that knew how to read the notes. So they would stick me on the noted stuff, on the noted instruments for the most part. I did that, you know, all throughout middle school. And then high school came around, and that's when I switched over to drumline. And that was a lot of fun, just like being in a group, you know, and you're just like dependent on each other to all hit the right notes and make a sweet beat happen. But yeah, it was a lot of drums, a lot of, you know, mallet percussion. I was in like the pit on like the sidelines for some songs. I was marching bass drum, and I would put on this the quint, you know, the tenor drums, where it's like five, you know,
that was
heavy as hell. But yeah, you know, it's been music like my whole life. And I think, you know, just having that, like that musical background, like in the, just the, just enough like education in it where it's like, okay. And like, I'm no expert on music theory or anything like that. I didn't like fully dive into that side of it. I'm more like Nick Cannon and drumline, where like, if you play it, I see you. And I'm like, all right, cool. I got that. Repeat it back. All right. I got it. But I can read the sheet music too. Just, you know, there's levels to this music theory shit. And,
sure. You know,
definitely not in the full mastery zone yet, but I am learning every day and trying to improve. So yeah, band definitely helped that.
The name of this episode is now going to be A Conversation with Fingers, parentheses, the Nick Cannon of percussion.
Yep. Well, I guess that leads me to ask, because it seems very, you know, cheesy in a sense of talking about musical influences, but you just brought up percussion like as sort of your history. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're talking about Jank Junk earlier. And that does seem to have, you know, a lot of your stuff does have a very four on the floor percussive sort of like get, you know, get your body moving style, and then you sort of sprinkle in the stuff. Is that like where you start when it comes to like musical influences? Like, is that something you like to like feel that first and then trickle in the other stuff? Or is it just more like, I got something and I'm going to
So you're saying like starting with drums, like starting just with
drums?
Yeah,
like
saying?
That just, okay. It seems like that's your, you know.
Yeah, that'll normally be like, I mean, like, you know, my band teacher taught me, is like, you know, drums are the foundation. You know, if they're not there, you're really not going to feel much, you know. So it's like, you can start a song without drums and it's like, all right. But it's like, when those drums hit, that's when all of a sudden everybody knows what to do. You know, it's like you're now conducting everybody where their head should be landing and telling where they should, you know, how they should be dancing pretty much. If you clap on 1 and 3, you're doing it wrong. You should be clapping on 2 and 4. So, you know, I think as a drummer, yeah, I definitely I put in a lot of, you know, drum heavy stuff, but I try to make it not the the star. And that's another thing that my band teacher taught me that stuck with me, is like, a good drummer, you don't really notice. They're just there, and they're not messing up or anything. It's just like, they're there and they're filling in the gaps perfectly. They're subdividing, you know, where you're not supposed to be. And they're syncopating over here and giving you everything else that you need, but you're not necessarily noticing them. They're not saying, hey, look at me. And that's, I try to do that more like melodically. Like I'll have the drums going and then I'll bring in a melody and it's like, oh, look at that. That's new. And I think that's like a good thing with music, is you give them 50% expected stuff and 50% unexpected stuff. And so like you get that resolve and, you know, you get the shock of like, oh, wasn't expecting that to take that turn here. And I think with this Jank Junk song in the middle of it, it does like a complete pull the e-brake, do a 180, slide into the other lane and start driving the other direction kind of move. It's really cool. Like, I like how it turned out. With Vector, we just basically put like a record break on it, and then his section of the song starts up, and it's just like this. But it all flows together. It's cohesive, and it doesn't make you go, wait, what? So I think, yeah, having that driving 4 on the floor, you know, that house beat behind it is just going to keep you going through that, you know. So it's very important, yeah, I would say, and it does drive a lot of my stuff for sure.
So yeah, I gotta say, I didn't want to like ask how the sausage was made in a sense, because I, you know, I've been trying to keep up with Twitter and all that. I'm not a big Twitter guy, but when it seems like when you sent the track to Vector, and he sort of added his flavor towards the end. So you say that record break piece, I kind of like that, because I was gonna ask like, well, what did it start? Did you give him a beat? Did he, you know, kind of roll from there? So it's nice to know that it's sort of like, oh, I like what I heard, and I put my little spin on it, and then we, you know, collab, make it like a real collab track. I like that.
Yeah, that's pretty much how, like, I like doing collabs. I think it's fun. You're gonna get a different result than if it were just you, of course, you know. So like, I did a song last year called Tombstone, and I did that with my buddies Mintorment and Goth Mystery Mafia. And the idea was like, I was like, hey, I got this cool little patch right here, and I've got a cool melody, and it's really simple. And that's, you know, like, I was like, the simplicity here is gonna help us. And so I sent it to all three guys as a MIDI file. Like, so basically I had like an idea of like what this song was going to do. And like, so the MIDI file is basically like digital sheet music for your computer to tell, you know, which notes to play. So I would send them that and then say, hey man, use whatever voices you want to use, whatever instruments, whatever patches, go crazy, go nuts, have fun. And it's like, when you tell someone to do that, they're like, oh, okay, I can do like my own style and my own thing. And it's like, yeah. And that's what I told Vector with this song. I was like, dude, here's the MIDI file. Here's what I've got. Like, you hear how it's starting, and I've got this whole like disco funk thing going. All right, now you do what you would do if you were to receive this MIDI, how would you do it? And then we'll turn it around and we'll figure it out. And we'll make it cohesive. And with this song, he actually did go back and like redo it. We were originally going to have 3 people on this, and then the third person got too busy. And so then that kind of changed it up, because we were leaving a slot for that third person. We didn't want to go too heavy. And then we're like, all right, third person's out, go full out, you know. And so that's how we did that. It's just sending it back and forth and going, yeah, I like that part, maybe adjust that part, and that'll, you know, that'll work out here. But it's a full like back and forth kind of thing normally. But yeah, that's, I mean, he, every time he sent me something, I was like, this sounds great. And then he would be self-critical and be like, I don't know, I don't like this part, I'm gonna go back and work on it some more. It's like, okay man, that's fine. But yeah, we ended up with something pretty good, I think.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah man. So like, if you could score any video game then, or ooh, any film, have you considered that? Is that a reality for you?
Scoring would be like scoring an entire film or scoring an entire movie. You got to realize that's like hours and hours and hours of music for a game. And then, you know, for the movie, you got, you know, whatever the running time is, 2 hours. And that, I think about that and I go, wow, this whole album was 32 minutes, or this whole album I made was 45 minutes. Like, oh, that's nowhere near that amount of music that you'd have to make. And I think Ludwig Forssell was talking about with Death Stranding. He was like, yeah, it was like over like 8 or 9 hours worth of music that I had to make. Boy. And not all of it even went into the game. It's just like, dude, that's so much music that you have to stretch it. Like 9 hours. Think about that, of like making something that lasts 9 hours. And they're all different, and they're all different songs. And it's like, so the even thinking about scoring something that huge is intimidating. Yeah. But I think there's another way to do music, kind of, if you think about it, like Katana Zero. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that game.
Yeah, that game basically, Katana Zero.
Yeah. And shout out to Ludwig, and shout out to Wick Recordings. That, and I've done an official remix for that game. That's out through Wick Recordings. Oh, but nice. And basically the way they did that game soundtrack is they were like, hey, this guy Ludwig has some awesome music. And like, he made it like years ago, and let's use that. And then there's Bill Kiley over here. Let's use his music that he made years ago that's not related to this at all, and just throw it in here as the stage music, because it just kind of fits. And I think that's more what I could see more for me happening. Like my albums are called VGM, and it doesn't stand for video game music. It stands for vague genre music, because most video game music is like, if you call some video game music, it's like, what the hell does that mean? You know, it's like, this could be a ballad. It could be techno. I mean, if you look at Metal Gear, the genres go all over the place, you know?
Yeah, so surf rock.
Yeah, it could literally, yeah. Metal Gear has a surf rock entry for sure.
Yeah. So but in a way, I feel like video games are such a good entry for new music. Like most of the music I've come across this year has been through a video game, be it, you know, Low Roar via Death Stranding. I'd never heard of Low Roar before.
Yeah.
Now I know who that is. I recently played Haven. That soundtrack is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, it seems like there's more and more attention being put to sound design and the development of soundtracks for video games, and the stakes are a little bit higher.
Yeah, they're definitely starting to get like the licensing money and stuff where they can like reach out to these things. And now they're reaching out to the bands, and the bands are going, hell yeah, we want to be in a video game. Where it was like, it used to be like, oh, video game, nah, I'm good. You know, like the times are kind of shifting with like how like movies and TV, it's like now video games are like the number one earning thing. So it's like, nobody goes to movies, you know? It's like, I don't know, it's definitely changing. So yeah, I think more like licensing my tracks out. Like, I would love to for some company to hit me up, be like, hey, we like this track, we want to use it in our game. Perfect. I've got this album called VGM. It was made for this use specifically. That's what that series of music is. It kind of, you know, I joke about it being big genre music, but it is music designed to be put in video games. Like, that's kind of, it's got those slow layers where it builds on top of each other. Yeah. And you've got like a big, you know, swell, and then it kind of calms back down, and then it can be looped again. And I think that's like what video game music has going for it, is like, you can listen to it over and over and over and it not be annoying. That's like the thing that you have to look out for with writing music for video games, is like, it's something that's normally catchy and you can sit there and listen to it for 10 minutes while you have the game paused. Yeah. So
I don't know why, as soon as you said that, I'm going to take you for a ride from Marvel vs. Capcom 2 just started blaring in my brain.
One of the best songs ever. Oh, my God. I would loop that for so long.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Jeremy, I'm going to come to you years from now, and I'm going to knock on your door, and I'm going to say, I have a feature in development. I need you to score my feature film.
I'm gonna go. How long is it?
Hey,
film.
To put it into perspective, though, I did have a composer score 3 original songs for a 15-minute short. So
yeah, and that's like short projects and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, I could definitely do that. I mean, I did score a video game a few years back called Sankofa, and that was a really small indie game that two people were. It was, I'm sorry, it wasn't two people. It was more than that. But they were working on it. The people that I knew were working on it as a university project. And it's on itch.io. But let's see, that was back in 2016. But it was basically 5 stages that I had to write for, and then like a title theme. And I was like, okay, this will be easy. And then they kind of just gave me like, hey, this is going to be the planes. And they gave me like art direction and like some concepts and stuff. I was like, okay, so give me some like musical references that you, you know, would maybe want to pair up with this. And they're like, yeah, we're thinking like Zelda Temple of Time vibes mixed with some like, and, you know, so they would kind of give me a direction. And then I was like, okay, I'm picking up what you're putting down. And then I would just go to work and then send them stuff and go, how about this? And they would go, ah, a little too happy or a little bit, you know, whatever. And then I would make adjustments. And then we, you know, pretty much just came to the final product that way. But yeah, that was a fun experience. So like, I'm definitely open to working and scoring stuff. It's just like, yeah, when you talk about scoring a whole game by yourself, it's like, that's a lot.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So shout out to Ludwig for getting down in those trenches and, I mean, yeah, his work on MGSV, I was listening to some of that today, even just like driving around, just that the OKB Zero and like Angering Mantis. Like if you listen to those, like those songs are nuts. Like just they're not the ones that people really show around and talk about. They're like, oh, Sins of the Father. It's like, yeah, of course, great song. But if you get into that real atmospheric, like gritty stuff where it's not like melody, it's just all these like creepy textures and a ticking clock in your left ear. It's like, what the hell is going? It's like, that is some really exciting stuff to listen to and to think about writing. It's like, that's that scoring mindset where it's just like, this is the music that's happening during some crazy scene and it's kind of in the background and it's really accentuating what's going on. So yeah. Writing stuff like that, it's complex and you literally have to write to the video of what's going on because you're hitting stabs and big things that are happening. So I think scoring, you're more like writing along to visuals that are already there. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure how they did it, but it's, you know, all those things are happening and they're edited together. When they hit, it's like this big orchestra swell and you're like, wow, I'm feeling this tension.
Yeah. What a cool vehicle to deliver B-sides to, because those cassettes being hidden throughout the world, like, I mean, obviously, like when the licensed stuff comes on, it's like, okay, Joy Division, cool, Aha, cool. But whenever you get those B-sides, kind of like demo stuff or whatever stuff that didn't fit anywhere, mm-hmm. like some of that stuff was like super dope in MGS5. Like,
agreed. And that's it's a shame because it gets like slept on, you know, it's like, there's no one's really going to hear this really.
Yeah. So. I didn't go to shack number 13 in the back half of the African map. So I missed that tape.
I missed that banger. It was back there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wanted to ask, before we kind of shift into Metal Gear territory, just because we're coming up on like the 36 minute mark. So obviously I want to kind of take us into the second half of this. But before we dive into that, I wanted to ask, I mean, is there any other like non-MGS information that you wanted to touch on before we kind of take things into like Metal Gear heavy territory for the remainder of the interview?
And we'll do plugs and stuff later, I'm sure. No, we're good. Enough about me and my music and memes.
Well, so you just mentioned Sins of the Father, and we had the pleasure of talking to both Stephanie Justin and Donna Burke on this podcast before.
Shout out to Donna Burke.
Oh yeah, Donna Burke is amazing.
Yeah,
like
she is
great human, like even outside of her singing, like I could like talk to her all day long. She's amazing.
Yeah, she did a reaction thing with, I did the official unofficial movie remix thing with her last year, and I got like the runner-up thing with that. So she recorded a little reaction video, and she was really nice. So
shout out to Donna Burke. Mm. And so I was gonna ask, I mean, having remixed that Hanging on a Thread for the movie, at any point have you considered like reaching out to her and actually doing like a collaborative thing, even if it's not for like an official project or anything?
I have reached out to her, and it's basically right now is kind of like a busy time to try to like take on side stuff for her. She was doing this was months ago when I asked, but it was right when she was starting up, you know, doing that tour and stuff. And so I've reached out, and I've talked to her management and stuff. I've like proposed an idea of like doing a cover of Calling to the Night together, and like just, you know, having her just sing a part for, you know, for an arrangement that we would do. We've like yanked her voice out of stuff before and put it in there, you know, unofficially, and she's commented on it. But yeah, I mean, that might happen down the road. You know, I think a lot of people are kind of stationary right now and looking for stuff to do. The tours have slowed down. So yeah, thanks for reminding me. Actually, I need to reach back out there.
I love it. Well, so I just want to ask real quick, Jeremy, have you played Peace Walker?
I have played Peace Walker.
Okay. So I just want to ask you one quick question. Did you feel more emotion when you were killing the horse or the boss in MGS3?
I mean, that poor horse, you know, you gotta think about its family and stuff, you know. I mean, the boss, I mean, you know. All right, so this is a throwback. I know what you're referencing. I didn't feel anything the first time I killed the boss because it was such an onslaught of information that I still didn't even know she was like a good guy at that point. I was like, wait, what the hell's Eva's working for China? What? Hold on, I gotta. Oh, I didn't realize the gravitas of that situation when it was happening, while it was happening. So, like, yeah, I definitely, but going back and now knowing everything that I do, yeah, of course, I'm not a monster. But, man, Peace Walker does have some emotional stuff going on in it, man. Like a lot of people knock it, but I personally loved that scene when Big Boss is like in there with the AI pod and he's just like, tell me why. Like, he's like, his voice is just like, and that's the thing. People are like, oh man, his voice is ridiculous during that scene. I'm like, dude, he's choked up and he's like begging a computer why it took away. You know, it's just like, holy shit, this is an emotional moment. So, like, I don't know. I hate when people are like giving voice actors a bad time when it's something like that. I thought he nailed that part. That was one part that I went, he still got it. But then, like, I checked online, everybody's like, oh, that part's stupid. I'm like, oh, I hate online sometimes.
Yeah. I will say, I feel like Peace Walker, dude, it's so weird because I remember feeling like, okay, MGS is done after 4, right? Mm-hmm. And then I remember picking up Peace Walker and thinking like, okay, portable ops, whatever. It's just going to be some like Gaiden fun thing, whatever. Yeah. Peace Walker, by the end of it, I was like, I love these characters.
Yeah.
And when the trailer for 5 came out, or Ground Zeroes came out, and it was like, oh, it's a direct continuation. I got so stoked thinking like, Paz is going to be there. And
she's there.
Chico's going to be there. And we're going to talk to Amanda. And then it's like, nope, Strangelove is dead inside of a container off screen. And it was like, I think, I don't know. I mean, I've come to peace with the fact that the things I like about V are not the things that I thought I was going to like about it.
Yeah.
But I really do wish in like an alternate reality that there would have been like a Peace Walker story sequel. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They ditched a bunch of characters. Know what you mean? Yeah. It's like they just kind of rid them off, and it's like, yeah, Chico, he had bolts in his ankles. So, he didn't swim after that whole thing. So, you know, we zoomed in on those bolts real hard. So,
oh yeah,
this old Chico is quiet thing really isn't adding up too much, but I don't know. Maybe they scooped him up. Crazy things have happened in Metal Gear.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
It is a shame that concept art that they had for Chico when he's got the hook and he's got the oh my God, that would have been great. He would just like pop up like some Gray Fox character and be in and out. You're like, what the hell was that? You know, that would have been a perfect inclusion, but nah, he did.
Between that game and Hitman, I still think to this day, how amazing would it be if you're in the middle of a mission and then you start getting hunted by someone you don't realize is hunting you? Yeah, it would have been an amazing intro to Chico where it's like, what the fuck is following me? And then it turns out it's him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that'd be awesome to have that as a separate gameplay mode. One game that did that great was the first Watch Dogs, like just like infiltrating someone's thing. And all of a sudden you were getting hacked and it was like, oh, no. And then like you just had this like one on one thing with somebody that they're trying to, you know, just like outsmart you. I actually have a clip of me online, like outsmarting somebody by just hiding in the bushes, like Metal Gear. Like I had my wall. I did a wall press against the bushes and the guy didn't see me. And I was wearing camo green pants. And like I was just like crouched down and the guy ran right by me. And I was like, see, kids, this is why you need to play Metal Gear. You learn life skills for other games. I was just a lot of like missed opportunities with MGSV, but like I enjoyed the hell out of it. And I played over 300 hours of it on like that first playthrough. So it's just like I got plenty of game out of that game.
Totally.
And it's like I can understand where people are wanting to see other things, but it's like the story's done. You can fill it in, like, you know, Manus and Liquid went off somewhere, and okay, cool. You can fill in the dots from here and get to Metal Gear 1.
Yeah.
And for me, that was like, I was like, perfect. The big mystery that they needed to solve was how the hell did Big Boss survive a NATO airstrike? Oh, he didn't. It was another guy. Okay, cool. I'm satisfied now because that was always bothering me. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I do feel like to some extent it would have been, I think, I don't know, maybe it was because of years and years and years and years and years of following the series, but I think everybody just expected like a huge bombshell, like it's over, like kind of a thing.
Yeah, and the way they advertised it, it was like, you're going to see him become that bad guy that you all know. It's like, ah, he's a good guy. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, as a musician, surely the music of Metal Gear, you've mentioned, you know, Ludwig Forssell quite a few times already. Mm-hmm. So can you talk to us about what kind of impact the Metal Gear series has had on you as a musician and your feelings on the scores in these games? I guess, do you have any favorite pieces or motifs or anything from any of the Metal Gear games?
Okay, yeah. Definitely love the stuff that they did in Metal Gear Solid 2. I love Twilight sniping. That's like one of my favorite ones. Let's see.
Hashtag Team MGS2. Thank you.
Damn right.
The way that they like mix together like orchestral stuff with this like hyper techno, like I loved that. That was such a cool like hybrid of music. And I
the
think
jazz
just like
stuff too.
Yeah.
Fortune's like, theme, baby. Fortune's
Arms,
theme.
Arms Depot.
Fortune's theme is so good.
Put Arms Depot on all day long. Just on repeat. It's great.
In the middle of this episode, I'm just going to cut in the entire MGS2 soundtrack from top to bottom.
Perfect.
It's a 4-hour
DMCA
interview.
Claim, here we come. But yeah, and like I think the original Metal Gear soundtrack is just like engraved in my head, you know, like just that. We were just talking about it the other day, like the Warhead storage music, you know, it's just got that bass line that's just so simple and just sits there, just that down, you know, it's just sitting there just like repeating for a while. And then that choir comes in and you're like, all right, I'm sneaking around. It's like that music played in two sections of the game when you're in the tank hangar and when you're doing the Warhead stuff. So it's just like that played a lot for me and like got really ingrained in my head. Now I love that slow, like build up, you know, it's just, you can tell that's sneaking music, you know, it's got that little shuffle in the drums kind of. So
I go back and forth between MGS2 and MGS1 as like favorite soundtracks for me all the time. Cause MGS1 has got such good texture work, man.
Yeah.
Like all the little like twinkly sounds. It's so good.
They use some, I've like looked into it and I've tried to like get those sounds into my computer and it's like, it's some Roland thing that costs like, it's like $2,000 to buy it nowadays, but it's like, it was this little sound bank that, you know, you would then hook up into a keyboard and it had all the textures loaded. And they're very good. And it's basically like what a lot of people call sound fonts, you know, it's like, that's kind of what it was for like back in the day with Super Nintendo, but then when they came to PlayStation, they could kind of bring on these like sampled sounds from other gear and load it on the disc and then compress it to all hell. But
yeah, that sweet, sweet compression.
So I got to say, I love, so I'll throw it out there. The Metal Gear Solid 3, we had just recently done it, but the reverb-y like slap back, like real plucky guitar, like almost like, mm-hmm. like a little like James Bondy style, like for that caution music. It's so good. Like what a great way to like, put us in a time era as mm-hmm. well as emphasize that we're, you know, we're still in a Metal Gear game. Like we're all here together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that.
Dude,
stuff.
The fucking flute too. Like
I was about to bring up that flute. Yeah. When that flute hits, it's like, whoo, we in the jungle, baby. All right.
It's so good, man. So, all right. Have you come across any like other good Metal Gear Solid samples in like other people's music? Have you caught any? I haven't. Personally, I'm kind of asking for reference.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're talking about in the notes, like, you know, there's that Burial one.
Dude, it's so good.
Yeah, and then, like, everybody else just samples a codec, and it's like, okay? Like, yeah. So to answer that question, a hard no. No one has really done it good. Like, no one has utilized Metal Gear Solid. And the most recent one, we were going to talk about this on the Kojima Frequency, but decided to just not because it wasn't that interesting. Like recently Logic got David Hayter, I guess, to do like a cameo or something. I don't know.
What?
And then it sounds like it's a cameo. I don't know. But it's basically a recording of David Hayter going, Logic. I don't even know what it says. Like it's basically him doing the Solid Snake voice. And he's like, do a mission, Logic. And like, it's like, cool, man, nailed it. And to me, I was like, dude, that was lame as shit. Like, shots fired, I guess. But I don't know. It's just, to me, I was like, okay, cool. Way to, it was like too on the nose. You know, it was like, it was a break in the song, a Solid Snake sample that he hired him to do. Like, also, you know, it's like you can pay them $30 and they'll say a line or whatever. It's like, cool. So I don't know. I really haven't seen anything. And that's what I try to do. I try to utilize the sounds. And I did my most recent remix that I did was of The Best Is Yet to Come. And when I first did that, it was an instrumental. And then it turned into a full rap song with featuring Black Liquid. He's a rap artist here from Richmond.
Liquid!
Liquid! Yeah. So... And the thing is, he was like a full-on Metal Gear Solid fan as well. So like, if you listen to that song, he's throwing in references and lines, and it's like, you know, I see that war has changed. You know, it's all this stuff. And I've got about 6 or 7 different Metal Gear Solid samples in there, like just scattered throughout. I have the Codex sound. That's one of them. I have the item pickup sound. I have the ration eating sound.
Nice.
But I don't even know if people heard them, but it's like, it's all part of it. And it's like, I'm trying to be the guy, I guess, that uses the samples in a cool way. So, cause I haven't really heard it used in a creative way other than someone throwing in a Codex sound and people go, oh, that's the Metal Gear thing.
Yeah. I still need to hear a track open with at the end of World War II, the world was split into two.
Yeah. Unrelated rap song after that. Bam!
Yeah, yeah, like, totally. Cool.
Way to have a sample. I know how to record stuff too.
Yeah, buddy. Fucking yeah, crazy, man.
Amazing. Does the same stuff sort of apply? Like, for, have you found like some great stuff outside of Kojima games, like that really sort of speak to you? You know, in reference to like some of the albums you've released and things like that. Do you have anything else that like, you know, sort of catches your ear?
I did mention it earlier, but I think like Hotline Miami, Katana Zero, pretty much like anything like Devolver Digital's been putting out. Like that's love that like retro take on stuff where they're just putting in these like gnarly electronic tracks where you're just like, oh man, what is this? And then you're like looking up the artist. That's Katana Zero, I think, is like, man, I wish I could have scored that or, you know, had some of my music in there. Hotline Miami, anything with that like cyberpunk-esque feel to it where it's like, just that retro wave kind of Outrun kind of feel where it's like, this is 80s. Hell yeah. You know, it's like that's super aware, you know, like I think that kind of stuff is like what my music lends itself to. Cause I'm just like emulating 80s textures, but bringing a modern contemporary kind of feel to it. So it's like this nostalgic, fresh thing. That's kind of like what I try to like make it. So it's not just chiptune. It's like, oh, this sounds like a Nintendo. It's like, well, no, it's got modern drums and modern other synths on top of it too. So yeah, I think like leaning towards that, like a retro style game where it's kind of using those 16-bit-esque textures, but not like a full chiptune soundtrack. That's kind of like what I kind of find myself in. It's a weird in between. I've never been able to really like classify my music that well.
Do you like the Shovel Knight soundtrack?
Oh, Shovel Knight was so good. Yes.
Oh, it's so good.
And that's a good example of like good chiptune where they're using, you know, tracker software and I guess it was like Nintendo chips that they're using. I'm really not into that side of stuff. Like I tried when I first started, it was just way too complicated. It was like you have to learn like hexadecimal just to program the notes. And I was like, I just want to play it on my keyboard when I touch the button. So yeah, I mean, like shout out to people that do chiptune. It's tricky and it's its own thing, but I just didn't want to like dedicate the time to learn that just for bloop bloop sounds when I can like just emulate them in a plugin that sounds pretty similar. But you're definitely getting the real deal with those tracker sounds. And that's what that Shovel Knight, you know, that full on like, oh, this is coming out of a Nintendo Entertainment System sound. I don't dislike it. I just don't make it too much.
Right.
I did a song called Alley Fight on my first album that was just like, it was pretty chippy, you know, and that's probably like as chippy as I've gone. That sounded like
chipping
like
in.
Yeah. Chipping in. That was pretty much like, you know, just like an NES take. And the song was called Alley Fight. So I was like, hey, this is like some Double Dragon, like whatever chiptune stuff. Or just like you fight and it's this happy, chippy music. So yeah.
That's awesome.
I got to say, Fingers, if you have not, the game called The Messenger, if that has crossed your paths at all.
Love it. Rainbow Dragon Eyes.
Yeah, he does such a great job of emulating, like, after hearing his process around, it's not just like, I'm going to take the same 8-bit track and I'm just going to, you know, filter it through a 16-bit sort of emulation. He actually, you know, had to retrack everything with the right triangle weight, you know, all the nerdy, you know, push your glasses up bullshit that everybody cares about when you just listen to it.
With like, it's that same stuff still applies in the synthesizers and everything I use. You've got your square wave and your triangle wave. It's just like that those chips like only had that one specific triangle wave or that one specific square on that chipset. So it's like, yeah, I've seen Rainbow Dragon Eyes do some of his streams. He's really talented in nailing that retro sound without using trackers. And they're getting better at it too. There's more and more plugins coming out that's just like, these are the drums that they used on the Sega Genesis. And you're like, that's that Sega Genesis sound. Yeah. And I've got a few of those. I want to make more music like that. It's fun. But
farty Genesis tracks.
Yep.
Keeping my eyes open for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, just fucking Toe Jam and Earl shitting their pants.
Oh,
dude,
my God.
Toe Jam and Earl is one of the best fun soundtracks outside of video games.
Absolutely. Oh, my God.
100% that bass line.
It's pretty decent. It's pretty
the new one was pretty good, too, man.
Well, I mean, so we talked about MGS and how it had that like rolling sound. So on the Toe Jam and Earl note, is Metal Gear also retro or becoming retro? I mean, are we just like some old dudes waxing nostalgic right now?
I think there was that division between like cartridge based games and disc based games. That's kind of like where the line is for me. It's like, here's where they're using chips and the things on the cartridges themselves. And here's where we're like exporting songs over on the disc. So I don't know. I don't know if MGS, I guess MGS 1 is retro by now, but not to my standard. I draw that line to MG2 Solid Snake. That's where I'm like, that's a retro game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were levels of compression on PS1. You couldn't just it was a great CD player, but the audio quality you can achieve in modern systems right now is ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, you do hear those like retro sounds from the PS1 era, and it's very haunting and chilling, like very synth heavy. Because it was like, to our ears at that time, I think, just like what, like listening to something in 3D in a video game, you know?
Yeah.
And hearing footsteps. And like, I think that's what made Metal Gear Solid so interesting, was not just the music, but the sound design and all of like the game being thought of from an oral way.
Yeah, the DualShock, dude. I feel like all of it. It was like, dude, it's moving in my hand and I can hear the footsteps on the wet pavement. Like, what the fuck is this?
So they paid attention to like room acoustics a lot in that game. It was like when you were like walking on different surfaces, like you heard the clink, clank, clink, you know, of the metal grate beneath your feet, or like the splish splash of that one little puddle in the beginning. It was like, and the reverb of the room. That was one thing that they did a great job of, just creating atmosphere. So yeah,
we heard it, but the Genome soldiers sure as fuck did not hear any of it.
I would say the combination between the menu music of that, of Metal Gear Solid, and the integration that when you hear Psycho Mantis's theme, that's him sort of taking over your mind as the player. Mm-hmm. The combo of that, because that opening theme, it's totally gets forgotten, but it even has like, when you hit the start button, it has like the gunshot. And it echoes. Yeah. That kind of stuff totally got me. And for a PlayStation game where I was, you know, not playing, like maybe another game that maybe rivaled it as far as like focusing on noise and music was like Final Fantasy VII at that point in my eyes. I was playing like not NHL 97, who didn't care about sound. You know what I mean? Like it didn't matter. But like hearing that kind of stuff just made it like so special for me, where I was like, I can hear the experience. It wasn't just like, oh, graphics make game good. You know, for 13-year-old Warren at that time.
Yeah, it really was like the first game too. You said like with the DualShock. Like I remember before that, it was all N64 Rumble Pack, where it was just like, like with everything you did. But like feeling that like subtle variation of the elevator, it was like pumping while you're going up. That was like the first moment I was like, wow, okay, we're doing something different with this. And so Metal Gear Solid, man, just like broke so many. It just did so many things that other games hadn't done. I mean, the Psycho Mantis fight alone looked into your memory card, probably violated some privacy laws. I don't know, but like, you know, I love that game. And that's when people ask me, like, what's my favorite? I just got to go back to that one. And I love all the other ones for different reasons. But like, favorite, got to give it to MGS1.
Sure.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, are we just super jaded, or is it real that we haven't seen a jump that far in a long time? Because like, I feel like other than the first time I tried VR 2 years ago, I can't think of the last time I had like an oh fuck moment with a video game in like a long time.
yeah, we're getting that diminishing returns, approaching realism and stuff. We're like, yep, still Uncanny Valley. Still, I mean, yeah. I will say, I think Death Stranding was the most recent one as far as just the seeing the actors and stuff. You know, they were all just right. Like, photorealistic, or it was like, yeah, that's Tommy Earl Jenkins. Holy shit. Like, there was no real, like, Uncanny Valley going on there with that.
And
that,
totally.
I think Kojima is the guy that's going to be pushing us in that next direction artistically or visually or whatever. He seems to be the guy that does it, you know, and his teams, of course. Of course, Kojima isn't doing all that, but like whoever's yeah, working with him, it's like, he's like, no. We need to make this like future proof, or like, this needs to be a step above what's going on. You know,
right,
he like has a certain caliber that he wants his work to be seen at, and he normally delivers. You know,
totally.
That's yeah. That's a good question, Alessio. I guess I'm trying to think. I feel like maybe like BioShock got me a little bit because I truly felt like a unrealistic world was real based right. on the game. But I don't. I think that's giving the game credit maybe for like how it connected with me. But like, because Metal Gear Solid did it, but realism, like I really felt like I was like, oh shit, I'm a spy. Like
yeah.
I'm doing espionage and shit. You know what I mean?
And I mean, the fact that we can still yeah. run into 40-year-olds on the street and say Solid Snake and they know where the fuck they were when they played MGS1 for the first time.
How many times
I think
they played
says
the Pizza
a lot.
Hut demo? Yeah.
Yeah. Like the fact that like people that I work with who never play games and they go, oh, you used to be on a podcast. What's it about? And I'm like, Metal Gear. Like the fact that they're like, oh man, that PS1 game, whoa, yeah.
Or it's worse when you're like, oh, the guy from Super Smash Brothers Brawl?
Oh, like, no, oh no.
From Twin Snakes flipping off of missiles?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, Jesus. Yeah, well, so I do want to ask Jeremy really, really quick, total off book, very quick sidebar. Because we were talking about it earlier where it's like, oh, what Metal Gears have you played? Oh, I played this or whatever. What do you think is the weirdest game in the series to be somebody's first game? Because I'm still convinced that MGS2 is the worst place for somebody to start.
Okay, like not counting like spinoffs. So you're saying like canon
entries? Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, core games.
I was
going to
say Metal Gear Acid 2. Just fuck them up. Tell them it's a card game. See if they come back. Weirdest one in the canon series to start on and be confused as hell. I think if you start on 4, you're just going to go, what?
Yeah, fair enough.
4 yeah, is a good one, yeah.
I mean,
Shonen Metal Gear.
And Nitroid has said he's known a guy that started with 4, and he ended up being one of the most like well-versed, well-informed guys that he knew, that, you know, because the guy like really dug in and like from that point was like, okay, now I can fill in the dots, where at the end that was kind of like the connection point for all of us when we had all the dots. He went like the backwards way. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's Metal Gear is definitely deep and complex, but all the information is there. So it's like no matter what order you play it in, you will eventually get it. I do tell people to play in release order usually, if for just references, gameplay nods. You're not gonna like going back to playing PlayStation 1 or MSX after you just finish MGSV. Like you're gonna appreciate how everything gets smoother and smoother. And by the time you finish up, you know, the Phantom Pain, you're like, man, I'm jumping and sliding around. And then if you go back yeah. to like, yeah, if you go from the Phantom Pain to PlayStation 1, it's like, ah, oh, this sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess on the note of that, do you have any thoughts about the film? I mean, are you optimistic? Have any idea of who should score it or who you would like to see Ooh. Score it?
Get Ludwig in there. I think he'd be perfect, man, for the movie, to be honest. I'd like to be featured, have a remix in there, thrown in on the after credit scene or something.
Like yeah.
Throw it out into the universe, make it happen. I think I'm optimistic on the movie. I don't like thinking negatively about upcoming things and dissing artists and, you know, as much shit as I talked on Logic earlier, whatever. that was objectively bad. But with the visions and the stuff that we've seen from Jordan, he's obviously a fan. I think he wants to do something novel with it, and I think that's what he should do. I think just trying to tell a flat retelling of Metal Gear Solid 1 without including anything else would be a mistake. I think I would like to see pretty much Metal Gear Solid 1 be, you know, that's a nice you know, you got a couple boss fights, you got a couple sneaking sections, and then you have a couple of flashback scenes or whatever to explain what happened in Snake Eater and what happened in Zanzibar Land. And that's really all you need. Like, I think that's like a cohesive story where, you know, he could see Gray Fox and be like, oh, I remember you from Zanzibar Land. Quick 2-3 minute, you know, cut to that and then come back. You know, I think if we do it like that, it could be a good, well-contained movie. And that's everybody saying this story is impossible to tell in 2 hours. Nah, not really. I mean, there's a lot jammed in there, but I think you can tell the story of a guy that goes into a place, gets tricked by some people to do a thing that he didn't want to do. And we can show how this has been going on for a long time, you know, by just showing the cycle of that, of Big Boss, you know, his predicament. And I think that's what Jordan's going to do, because he's definitely playing around the timelines, and then all the art pieces were just for fun. They weren't representative of what the movie's going to be, or at least that's what he said. So we're not going to see Gray Fox fighting a gecko from MGS4. That's bonkers. But I think he just wanted to see that artistically and get some people's gears going, like, okay, this is what this world is, and we could make this happen. And I think what he did with Kong Skull Island, he's good at directing action, and those, I still don't know what they're called. On the first episode of the Kojima Frequency, I called them those weird invisible dinosaur things. I still don't know what they're called, but they went invisible. And I was like, if Gray Fox did that same visual effect, that would look sweet in a movie. And that was that was before the movie was even announced, but he was kind of like claiming to say he was going to do it. And Oscar Isaac, I think he's been given some bad lines to read from Disney, so I'm not going to judge him on the Star Wars, you know, sequel trilogy. I think he's a good actor and could probably nail it. I'm optimistic, and I like to just say, yeah, I hope it's good. I'm going to see it. Hopefully I enjoy it. And if not, it's not the end of the world, whatever, you know,
they've got a good foundation to build off of, because literally all they have to do is watch Escape from New York and they're fine.
it's pretty much the same movie. Yeah. But yeah. I think if Kojima's acting consultant, you know, and he's not on set every day, it might turn out pretty good. You know, I think if he's muddling in it too much, I don't know how he's going to do with movies. We've talked about, like, when Kojima is given a project or something, and they try to, like, maybe he works best in like a restricted, like, all right, this is all you got to do, and this is it. But like, if you give him like, hey man, go nuts, then we end up with Death Stranding, and it's like, all right, cool, enjoyed a lot of that, but that whole beach scene with Amelie, what the 18 fuck?
Credits, 18 yeah. credits,
and it's amazing. Just
like, I get you're doing your thing, but I didn't really enjoy that. And if that was in a movie, and I don't know, I don't know if his game directing that he's very good at is going to transfer over to good movie directing. But I think Jordan's got a good eye for it. He's obviously a fan, like I said. So I'm being optimistic for it. You know, I hope it comes out, and I hope it's great, and I hope it lets more people know about Metal Gear Solid. And that's kind of like, I love talking to new people about Metal Gear Solid, introducing them to it, and then seeing them get into it. It's like, hell yeah, yeah, I told you it was good shit. So like, for me, I'm just like, yeah, bring it on. Like, I want more Metal Gear games just because Kojima's gone. I don't want them to stop making them. I want more Metal Gear stuff. It's way more than Kojima himself. You know, there's a whole team still at Konami that still is passionate about the games. And there's a lot of higher up executives that are saying, yeah, cool idea. No. You know, it's like, they want to do these cool games that we've wanted to do. And after Kojima left, they were like, well, yeah, we're playing around with this Fox engine. Yeah. Hey, you know what works for this? Tower defense. Let's throw this in there. This will be fun.
Yeah.
And they put it out there as like a side, you know, just a spin-off game that wasn't supposed to be taken seriously. And guess what everybody did? They took it seriously, got mad about it, and they were offended because it wasn't what they wanted. But they also were saying they didn't want Konami to make Metal Gear Solid 6 without Kojima. So what the fuck do you want to do, man? That's like, the internet is just so like self-defeating, where it's like, we want Cyberpunk now. Oh, here it is. It sucks.
Oh, no.
Damn it. I shot myself in the foot.
Put it back in the oven. Quick.
Yeah.
So I think we need to let creators kind of do their thing and stop telling them what to do and being so entitled of like what our expectations are, and just let people create, you know? I mean, I think if we shut up and let Jordan do his thing and there's not all these people in his ear, I think he can crank out something good.
Totally.
So what you're saying is we need to learn to let go. as Metal Gear fans.
That's, like, people play these games and they do not absorb the lessons, man. It's like, are you paying attention back there?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Well, yeah, I think the one thing with, like, look, everybody wants a new Metal Gear game, I think, in our hearts, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We can pick on Survive in a sense, but I got to say Survive looked good. I think the big thing, and you, I think you recently brought it up on one of your Kojima Frequency pods, was I think the main thing that I want them to create Metal Gear for is because I think the Fox Engine is eventually just going to become irrelevant and just forgotten.
Oh, it already has, man.
Yeah, right? Like, yeah. I want them to use it so that they are forced to update it and it's lower cost to keep it going, because for that, what, 3 years that it was sort of was like up top, it did sort of top other, you know, yeah, Unity's like the big one, right? You know, Unreal. And yeah, it's just Fox has a real chance, but if they don't do anything with it other than MGS3 cutscenes for pachinko machines.
They're doing PES.
Well, I think yeah, they stopped doing that too. I mean, that's the thing. Like Fox, no, like they stopped using that for they're using Unreal for that now. Because yeah, it's like, it is kind of an antiquated, unupdated yeah system that they've made better shit in 5 years. Like, but yeah, yeah, it's a shame that got underutilized, because I loved the feel of that engine. Like it's Survive and MGSV, both games that came in that were just like, oh man, this is PT. So good. PT, yeah.
Yeah, PT looked good.
Yeah, it did.
Well, cool. So Jeremy, just to close this off, I wanted to read off a listener question. Unfortunately, right, when we put together our like call, mm-hmm, we forgot to allow people to say who the hell they were. So anonymous listener number, I don't know, 1975, says, whenever you're remixing Metal Gear music or putting together a longer form set, are there specific influential traits that you find yourself going back to, or is it mostly a what sounds cool in the moment thing? Side note, I'm a big fan of your stuff. I listen to Kojima Frequency every time it comes out. Great show.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate that, buddy. So as far as sets go, I think he's talking about like DJ sets and like throwing together a set. Yeah, that's its own thing too. It's definitely you kind of want to have a roller coaster ride that's kind of like what I try to do. It's like you have some uptime where it's like, all right, cool, we're dancing. All right, let's take a break. Like let's chill it back down for a minute, and then you want to like get back in there and surprise them, but you don't want to be jarring, like to where it's like, oh God, what we're doing this now? Okay, so I think normally when I do DJ sets, I'll sort all my stuff by BPM and just slowly work my way up. And so it's kind of like I'll start kind of with like the slower jams and work my way up, but then I'll have another song in there that's like halftime of what it is. So like it'll be like a 140 BPM track and then like a 70 BPM track. Mm-hmm. So you'll get that halftime break of like, oh, okay, we're chilling now, but we're still working our way up the BPM because the next song's going to go cut time, which is twice as fast. So it's like, that's kind of my process when I'm doing that, is I try to not just have like banger, 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 banger. You know, you got to have a little rest in between and then hit them back with the bangers again.
I wanted to ask, I mean, so other than fingers.bandcamp.com, which again, fingers has got a 1 and a 3 instead of an I and an E.
And that rhymes.
Where do you typically send people as far as like promoting your work?
Yeah, I'm on YouTube, youtube.com/fingersmusic. A lot of my social stuff, it's spelt the same way. It's F1NG3RS music. So that's all like one word. Twitter, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, all at Fingers Music. But if you just Google Fingers, that'll pretty much pull you up anywhere. I also have a Patreon, patreon.com/fingers. Everybody gets like free downloads as I release them. They can get stems and like individual parts where you're getting like just the drums or just the bass if you want, you know, and mess around with it yourself, make your own remixes. I'm on Twitch every once in a while, not too much. Yeah, pretty much any social media site, if you type in Fingers, you'll find me.
That's awesome. And 100%, like, and we've always been pretty gung-ho about waving the flag for any and all MGS content, but like Kojima Frequency, 100% go subscribe, everybody go check out that podcast. Can't plug you guys enough. It's been interesting to see how everything shakes out over the years, because I think after the first few months of us starting back in 2015, there were a few shows that popped up. I think it was like Foxcast, one other one other podcast. And it's so weird to see, like, every few years something will pop up for a few weeks or a couple of months and then just kind of completely disappear again.
Yeah. With social media, you can kind of, I get why people give up so easily, because it's like, I'm putting it out there. Oh, we're not making views. Oh, it's not. Okay. And then, like, people just get like, I've been releasing music for over 10 years. So it's like, I am way outside of that mentality of like, oh no, people didn't like it immediately. That must mean that I suck, or that must, you know, it's like, it's getting so hard to get stuff out past the algorithm now. It's like, if you include a link, if you include a tag, if you say the wrong word, or if they detect something in your picture, they're going to nerf the reach of your post. So it's really hard to get content out. And if you don't know that, then it's like, it just seems like self-reflection on the product. And a lot of people just give up.
Right. So, when you also have to build a catalog too. Cause I mean, yep. One of the things we learned from doing this show is like, people are interested in different things. So like, yeah. they may come for Death Stranding and stick around for everything else. They might come for an interview with Fingers and stick around for everything else. Like, you never know, you know.
Came for the fiddles, stay for the podcast.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Well, cool, man. No, thank you so much. I don't know. Anything else that you want to plug, feel free. But barring anything else, I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it on the plugs. Yeah, just check out my music and download it. And if you support, you know, if you want to support, you can buy it, you can stream it. I've also got my music on pretzel.rocks. If you're a streamer out there and you're getting DMCA claims and you don't like it, you can get pretzel.rocks. And that's like it's pretty much like stream safe music. So it's like, I've put my music into their catalog. You use Pretzel and they, you know, it kind of like integrates into your stream. You've got background music. It shows who's playing and what the song title is and links to where to buy it. And then we get paid every time people use it. So if you want to support artists, pretzel.rocks is a good way to do it.
I learned something new today.
Yeah, that's actually a really good service. You guys should check out.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, cool. All our plugs are at the front of the intro of the show. So you guys know what to do. And thanks again. Fingers Music, everybody. Hell yeah. Talking Metal Gear Music. Hopefully not for the last time. So
yeah.
Yeah. Hey. Thank you guys again so much.
Thanks.